Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Speaking of the Supreme Court, and maybe Leonard will get Boies and Olson on this later on, we'll be talking about it with Dahlia Lithwick in a little while. The Supreme Court has issued a ruling in the legal tussle between streaming TV service Aereo and major network broadcasters. According to the website TechCrunch, the Supreme Court ruled that the decision which upheld that Aereo was within the bounds of the Copyright Act shall be reversed, a 6-3 decision. In other words, this company that was taking the broadcast signals from the open-air broadcast channels, not the cable channels, but the old, you know, channel 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, like those, and distributing them online was stealing. Looks like goodbye, Aereo, but we'll see how they actually react as a business to the Supreme Court ruling. And speaking of the Holland Tunnel, now some new wrinkles on the Bridgegate story.
Brian, you never knew tunnels and bridges would provide so much fodder for local national conversation.
I love bridges and tunnels, though I love bridges more than tunnels, I have to say, because of the view, for no other reason. Another bridge gets an investigation. A look at the way Governor Christie's national aspirations complicate dealing with New Jersey's vulnerability to climate change. It's going to be part of this conversation with Andrea Bernstein, WNYC's senior editor for politics and policy, talking about some of these stories that have been breaking around us and that she's been breaking this week. Hi, Andrea.
Good morning, Brian.
So start with the latest on the George Washington Bridge lane closure story. Bridgegate. Phone records have now been released that show the governor's staff was in communication with his Port Authority appointees at key moments in that timeline, including when the lanes were closed and when reporters started looking into the cause of the traffic tie-up. Bless you, a rare moment of a reporter sneezing on the air.
Yes, not sneezing at the records, though. The records were fascinating. And what happened is that the legislature has been slowly releasing documents as they interview witnesses. And you remember a couple weeks ago, the Joint Legislative Committee looking into Bridgegate questioned Kevin O'Dowd, Governor Christie's chief of staff. And I happened to notice that they flashed on the screen some phone records of David Sampson very briefly. And then they kind of disappeared, and I wasn't sure if they were going to release them because Mr. Sampson himself has taken the Fifth Amendment and is not testifying before the committee. But Matt and I went and we dug them out. We found the records and we started to read them. And the phone records of David Sampson are an incredible document because you remember David Sampson has not spoken to the legislative committee. He did not speak to Randy Mastro. He, other than these phone records...
Mastro, who investigated Bridgegate on behalf of Christie.
Right. He was never interviewed by those lawyers. So there are interview notes with many of the key figures, but not David Sampson. So we have no detail what he was doing during this period other than the rather cryptic note from David Wildstein on the day the lanes were reopened by the New York-appointed executive director saying Sampson is retaliating. And here were phone calls showing that Sampson was in touch with all of the key figures on both sides of the Hudson. So he was in touch with David Wildstein and Bill Baroni, the top officials at the Port Authority, during the week of the lane closures and at key moments in the aftermath. And he was in touch with Kevin O'Dowd, the chief of staff, Regina Agia, the head of authorities unit and chief of staff in waiting, if Kevin O'Dowd ever gets confirmed as attorney general in New York. So this tells us about a level of communication and discussions that we didn't know about. Now, let me say, we don't know what's in those phone calls.
That's really important. We don't know what's in those phone calls, right? So they were communicating a lot. That is the governor's office and the governor's Port Authority appointees. As the lane closures and when shortly after that reporters started to ask questions about the lane closures, when they were going on and after they were going on. But you would need a lot more to prove against the governor's contention, which is that he personally did not have any role in planning those lane closures.
Right.
And certainly not as political retribution.
What this document tells us is that there was a much greater degree of communication between the Port Authority and the governor's office than we knew about. And in all of the things that Governor Christie has said and that his staff have said when they've testified before the legislature, they've said that was over at the Port Authority. That was them. That was their traffic study. And we're Trenton.
But we already knew that Bridget Kelly, who was the deputy chief of staff, so she's the governor's office, wrote that email that said, time for some traffic problems in Port Lee, to one of their people at the Port Authority. So does anything in these additional backs and forths suggest that it went any higher than Bridget Ann Kelly?
Well, it certainly could, because there were so many phone calls at a time when this was not only happening, but then it was breaking, and there were press inquiries, and David Sampson was talking to Governor Christie's communications chief, Maria Camilla, many phone calls to her. He was talking to both O'Dowd and Aegea several times a week. During this period, they were making inquiries, they were asking questions. Regina Gia wrote an email that said, we are holding to the script of all under review, talking about what the Port Authority was saying to reporters. And then very suggestively, on the morning that Bill Baroni went and gave what we now know is bogus testimony to the legislature, David Sampson spoke to Regina Gia at length. He seems to have urgently tried to reach Kevin O'Dowd and Bill Baroni while he was testifying. And then he spoke to Bill Baroni at length after. So he was much more involved than anybody has let on. The governor has said Sampson was not involved on an operational level, and yet these phone records show what we've heard but have no proof of, which is that he was talking to Bill Baroni every day, several times a day, sometimes rather substantially long phone calls.
All right. Interesting. So I said we're going to talk about several stories developing in these related areas. Now we have what I saw referred to as Bridgegate 2. The New York Times reported earlier this week that there's another investigation underway, this time into the possibility that the funding for the Pulaski Skyway repairs, which are making people's lives hell right now, constitute securities fraud, because in order to get the Port Authority to pay for it, the Skyway was characterized as an entrance to the Lincoln Tunnel. Who's conducting this investigation, and why would there be a scandal around characterizing the Pulaski Skyway as an entrance to the Lincoln Tunnel?
Well, we have known about these investigations for at least since April. Both the SEC and the Manhattan District Attorney, the Port Authority recently confirmed in some documents of the existence of the SEC investigation. So the fact that they're being investigated is not so new. What is new and what the New York Times brought to the table in their story yesterday was a series of memos from Port Authority attorneys to Governor Christie's office saying, we don't have the legal justification for this, we shouldn't be doing this, and memos coming back from the Christie administration pushing very, very hard for the Port Authority to do this. The reason there isn't the legal justification is because the Holland Tunnel was built before the Port Authority was founded. So an access road to the Holland Tunnel, which I think most of your listeners know the Pulaski Skyway is. I mean, the Pulaski Skyway doesn't go to the Lincoln Tunnel. And, you know, it's funny, Brian, because...
And that's the key, distinction
it's
here.
It's key.
Right? We're not talking about the Pulaski Skyway as an entrance.
Right.
And even the word entrance, but it's
as an access road
to the Holland Tunnel, but to the Lincoln Tunnel.
And that's what they put in their
documents. At 42nd Street.
And there was one point where I was talking about this and I got confused because I had heard their rationale. I'd heard them say the Pulaski Skyway is an access road to the Lincoln Tunnel. I was repeating this and I was like, wait a minute. That doesn't go to that tunnel. So that's how they described it. Their argument is that the transportation system is a holistic system. So an access road to the Holland Tunnel should be the same thing, essentially, as an access road to the Lincoln Tunnels. But now there is a serious legal inquiry about whether that constitutes fraud. And, you know, we've talked about this before. We have talked about the ARC tunnel, the transit tunnel under the Hudson River that didn't get built, how Christie killed that. I had reported back in January about how it was clear that Christie from the get-go had decided he wanted that money for the Skyway and was going to go through whatever hoops he had to get it because there was no money in New Jersey and he didn't want to break a campaign promise and raise the gas tax, even though New Jersey has the lowest gas tax in the nation except for Wyoming.
So the ARC tunnel, another tunnel between New York and New Jersey, would clearly be an interstate project and fall under the jurisdiction of the Port Authority, which is an interstate agency. The Pulaski Skyway, being a New Jersey-only road, maybe not so much. So were those federal funds legitimately used for a New Jersey-only project? But back in April, when the construction started, D.A. Vance was already looking into this question. And we asked Jersey City Mayor Steve Fulop about the news and whether he was worried that the whole thing could wind up causing even a bigger traffic tie-up than it already is. So are you concerned at all that this repair might end up in some sort of legal limbo and not get done, you know, in even as an efficient manner as is planned now?
Please don't say that. Let me say it this way. The way I understand this project has already been bid out. We have the contractors on site. We're working to actually expedite the projects wherever possible. And I don't think this is going to get held up in any sort of kind of legal hiatus just because of the importance of the Pulaski Skyway.
Poor Steve Fulop. Please don't say that. And poor drivers. I mean, if the repairs funding was fraudulent, could that stop the work now being done?
I think this is an area of great unknown. I mean, you know, at the time when the funding was voted, there were a lot of people who said this is an inappropriate use. And probably had it not been for the other Bridgegate scandal, this would not have come under federal scrutiny. I think the question is not whether the Pulaski Skyway needs to be fixed. I think everybody would agree that it does need to be fixed. The question is where does the money come from? Does it come from the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which has a specific bond mandate and covenants with its bond owners, or does it come from the New Jersey State DOT?
By the way, more breaking Supreme Court news. According to the Associated Press, the court has handed down a decision limiting police searches of your cell phone when you're arrested unless they have a warrant. And so we'll get the details from Dahlia Lithwick from Slate coming up after Andrea. But this was a much-watched question. Is your cell phone, which, you know, probably contains everything about you at this point, could they search everything, all your files on your smartphone if you were arrested for some traffic infraction or something like that? And then who knows what they would find and what else it might lead to? Well, the Supreme Court in some way, and we'll find out how and how much, has limited police searches of arrestees' cell phones unless they have warrants to look inside. So we'll get details on that coming up. That from the Supreme Court moments ago. I see that the funding for the Tappan-Zee Bridge is the subject of a New York Times editorial this morning. That's not a Chris Christie story, but it seems that money normally used to clean rivers needs to be or is being diverted to the rebuilding of the Tappan-Zee Bridge, or I should say the new Tappan-Zee Bridge. Do you think the Pulaski Skyway investigation has any, you know, overtones for this Tappan-Zee Bridge question?
Well, I think that this all comes from the same phenomenon, which is that governors want to build infrastructure. It's obviously very important to their constituents, and they don't have a lot of money, and they don't want to raise taxes. Christie, to solve that problem, went to the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Cuomo, to solve that problem, is going to this obscure authority that I had even forgotten existed called the Environmental Facilities Corporation and said, I'm taking $500 million for the Tappan-Zee Bridge. And we've been asking him about what the financing plan is for the Tappan-Zee Bridge from the get-go, and we've never, ever, ever seen one. So apparently, you know, sort of if the Port Authority was Christie's political piggy bank, then New York State, which has a lot of authorities with a lot of money, Cuomo sort of sees it that way, as this action would suggest. Now, there have to be some official actions to approve this. The Environmental Facility Corporation has to approve it. Remember the Public Authorities Control Board, that obscure body that killed the West Side Stadium? They have to vote, so there's political pressure there. There's some belief that the federal EPA, which is reviewing this, has to approve it. So this may not happen, but it's interesting because I think normally we don't review these big money deals in real time. One of the outgrowths of Bridgegate may be that in fact, we are.
Andrea Bernstein with us, WNYC Senior Editor for Politics and Policy, as we talk about primarily several stories surrounding Chris Christie that are breaking this week, including the one that she and our New Jersey State House reporter Matt Katz dug up that we discussed before. So we took a little detour into Cuomo world. Let's go back to Trenton and climate change. Governor Christie has been resistant to connect flooding and Sandy to climate change. Is that fair to say?
Yes, without a doubt.
And your reporting is kind of that he says one thing about climate change in the abstract, but then his actions are different than that.
Right. It's really interesting what he says about climate change because, as we know, several members of the Republican Party with national aspirations deny that climate change exists. And, for example, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida has said that. Florida has a big problem. Miami is sinking. You can already go out to Lincoln Road in South Beach and see water coming up out of the sewers on a sunny day. And one of the things about New Jersey that raised alarm bells for me is that about a month ago, the White House released a report saying climate change is here and we are already feeling the effects of it. And New Jersey, the White House report showed, is experiencing extremes even more. So much of the country is experiencing temperature rises of about 1.5 degrees so far since the middle of the last century. For New Jersey, it's over 2. If you look at a map and you're color coding it, New Jersey is deep red in how hot it's already gotten. Because of some geological features of the New Jersey coastline, it's sinking faster into the sea, and it's gotten 70% wetter, along with the rest of the Northeast, since the middle of the last century, and the rains come in these big, big events. So, given the fact that New Jersey is right in the bullseye of these climate change effects, you would think that the state's governor would be addressing this from purely a pragmatic point of view. But one of the things that we found when talking to him is he really doesn't want to talk about it.
In fact, here is a soundbite of Christie from May, who kind of poked fun at our Christie administration reporter, Matt Katz. I think he referred to liberal public radio constantly asking him about climate change. So this in response to a question from Matt Katz about the White House report on the impact of climate change in May.
I mean, I don't have enough sound bites for me on climate change. I mean, seriously, I've said what I wanted to say on climate change, and there's nothing that was in that report that changed my opinion that I've expressed before, that I believe that climate change is real, that I do believe that human beings contribute to it, but that I have concerns in other areas like global warming. So there, I said it for you again. You got that now? Good. You owe me one.
So that's the governor talking about it. The thing is that when you look at what Governor Christie has done, I mean, there's just all kinds of things that he has not done. For example, there's a website, What is New Jersey Doing About Global Warming? Christie's name is at the top. It's an official New Jersey State website, but then everything on that dates from the Corzine administration. John Corzine left office in 2009. And he has rolled back on wind initiatives. He's rolled back on solar. There are 120 electric car charging stations in New Jersey. As we know, he kicked out Tesla. He, to the great alarm of environmentalists, withdrew from the regional greenhouse gas initiative, a cap-and-trade program in New Jersey. So
that was including various northeastern states.
Right, 10 states. So when you look at that, and then you look at the response to, say, Sandy-like storms, New Jersey requires a foot raising of buildings, whereas all the other states are requiring 2. Every state from Virginia to Maine has or is actively putting together a climate change adaptation plan. Not New Jersey. So when you look at the politics of this, it's interesting because I talked to a number of people who poll on this issue, and the country as a whole, including Republicans, by large majorities, has come to believe that climate change exists, as Christie said, that human activity contributes to it, as Christy said, but there's a deep uncertainty about what to do about it. And that's sort of exactly where Christy is. So he's sort of where the country is politically, but he is not at the point where a lot of Republicans came out this week and said bold action needs to be taken, and he is certainly
not
far from that.
Taking bold action in New Jersey. I actually want to replay that clip of Christy in May to Matt Katz, and I want you to listen closely to this language and then explain it to me, because in this kind of resigned way, he said, yeah, I believe climate change is real. Yeah, I do believe that human beings contribute to it. But then he says, I have concerns in other areas like global warming, and I don't understand it. So listen to this clip again, and then maybe, Andrea, you can unpack this for us.
I mean, I don't have enough of sound bites for me on climate change. I mean, seriously, I've said what I wanted to say on climate change, and there's nothing that was in that report that changed my opinion that I've expressed before. That I believe that climate change is real, that I do believe that human beings contribute to it, but that I have concerns in other areas like global warming. So there, I said it for you again. You got that now? Good. You owe me one.
So did he mean I have concerns in other areas like global warming is different than climate change? Or did he mean did he really mean to say I have concerns in other areas than global warming, which means global warming isn't my only concern?
I honestly don't know, and I sought clarification and did not receive it from the Christie administration. There is a debate in the Republican Party. Frank Luntz, when George W. Bush was president, rebranded global warming as climate change because he thought that was a more benign term. So it's possible that Christie was saying that, or it would be consistent with what he said in the past about Sandy, which is, literally, I don't have time for esoteric scientific theories. I have a state to rebuild. And one of the things that's interesting is this week, with all of these former Republican national figures like Paulson and Schultz coming out and saying that the country's economy faces calamity unless they do something, that significantly changes the debate. And it really shows this fissure in the Republican Party between the very deep red conservative base that votes in Republican primaries and what the Republican Party sees it has to do to win a national election. And it's playing out for Republicans the way the issue of gay marriage used to, which is why Christie is probably suggesting to us, I don't want to talk about this, because it's kind of a no-win.
That's very interesting about Henry Paulson, President Bush's Treasury Secretary, who had, I think, a joint statement with Michael Bloomberg this week about the calamity.
And Schultz, and George P. Schultz, the former Secretary of State.
Under Reagan.
Right.
Who could now bond together as the new, I don't know, centrist party for the importance of global. Remember that Bloomberg was going to stay neutral in the presidential race and only came out for Obama at the last minute because of the difference between him
right.
and Romney on climate change.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, I remember those days very well because in the 2010 elections, the Koch brothers, who, by the way, congratulated Christie for withdrawing from the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and we have a little bit of tape of that, but the Koch brothers poured money into the 2010 elections to defeat anybody who had ever voiced any possible support for cap and trade. All of those candidates lost, and after that, nobody was talking about it in either party, including
right.
Governor Cuomo.
Yeah.
Then after Sandy, he came out and he said, climate change is here, it's a reality. Bloomberg made his remarks, but not Governor Christie.
And just give us the background, which is very interesting. If you know it, this Frank Luntz thing, the Republican consultant who wanted to change global warming to climate change in the public discourse, he's been pretty successful. I'll bet if we count up references in major media to climate change as opposed to global warming, that they're at least comparable. And global warming is something very specific. The globe is getting hotter. Climate change means, well, something's different than it was yesterday. We don't know in what direction.
Right. I mean, and I think that has been a successful rebranding, Although one of the things that's interesting is it has allowed people, and there's a center at Yale, the Yale Center on Climate Change Communications, and they look at these things. But what is happening now and what's very interesting is all of these extreme weather events, the heat waves in Texas, tornadoes, floods, extreme rain, there is polling data that shows people are beginning to be alarmed about that, feel it's part of climate change, and that something should be done.
And I think the scientists more say, instead of just global warming, it should probably be called global atmospheric psychosis. Because the changes come, you know, in extreme ways and in various directions. But I would think, sorry, Frank Luntz, this is just my guess, and you're the pollster and I'm not, but that if we polled Americans and asked if they saw a difference between climate change and global warming, or if they thought either one was any less alarming, that at this point they're completely equivalent in people's minds.
I think that there's going to be a poll coming out from Yale on that any moment now, which will give us shed some light on that question.
WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, senior editor for Politics and Policy. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.